The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
All right, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know that I have some real favorite guests. Well, this is my favorite guest, and I love having her on. She's been with us several times. She's a brilliant, brilliant economist and a really wonderful person. We've got with us today Dr. Nayantara Hensel. Dr. Hensel is now Associate Director of Policy Research at the Federal Housing Agency, but she's most known as the former Chief Economist for the Department of the Navy, and she has a brand new book, which is out today, called The Defense Industrial Base, Challenges for a Globalizing World. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Michael, and thank you so much for that nice introduction. I appreciate it.
Listen, we love having you on. So I guess we have to start out at Greece. I mean, because it's top of mind and has been top of mind for a long time. In fact, so much so that I'm staying away from Mediterranean restaurants because I'm just tired of hearing the word Greek. But what's going on there? Is this really important?
I think that it is. It isn't directly in the sense that, you know, the Greek economy is only 1.8% of the entire Eurozone. And the U.S. exports to Greece are just a few thousandths of 1% of U.S. GDP. But I think that the issue is that if, in fact, you know, on the 5th, when the Greek voters, if they do vote against the austerity plan, and if, in fact, Greece does not pay on July 20th the 3.5 billion euros it owes to the ECB, in addition to the 1.5 billion euros that it owes today to the IMF, I think that we're running the risks of potential contagion. You know, Spain, Italy, Portugal also have similarly high debt as a share of their GDP. And if, in fact, investors become much more concerned about the possibilities that this could happen in other countries, we're going to see a real flight, I think, to stronger currencies like the dollar, like the Japanese yen. We've already seen how the Swiss National Bank has been concerned about its currency rising and has actually tried to sell some of its currency to try to keep it down a bit. But, you know, in Italy, you know, Greece's debt to GDP is 177%. Italy's is 132%. Portugal's 130%. And in Spain, they have substantive debt, and there's also an issue about their left-wing party, Podemos, potentially gaining more power in the upcoming elections. So there's a lot of concerns about this, and I think that some of this contagion or the potential for contagion could also be seen over time, maybe in the bond yields, because, you know, if people are concerned about Spain, Italy, Portugal, they're going to start selling those bonds, and when they start selling those bonds, those yields are going to be climbing up, you know, factoring in some of the risk. I think that the strong dollar could have strengthening of the dollar. If investors rush towards the dollar, could have a real impact on the U.S. You know, in the first quarter, you know, we saw how our economy contracted at a 0.2% annual pace. Well, one of the big concerns so far over the first half of the year on the manufacturing sector has been the fact that the strong dollar makes U.S. goods, you know, relatively more expensive overseas. We saw how exports fell at a 5.9% pace from January through March, led by basically in the goods exports, an 11.6% decline. And, you know, imports rose at 7.1% last quarter. We might see an acceleration of those two trends if the dollar strengthens further. And that's something that Chairman Yellen mentioned as a concern in her decision about whether or not and when she should be raising interest rates. And if, in fact, interest rates were hiked up in the U.S., perhaps at the end of 15, early 16, that could also strengthen the dollar. So, you know, there's definitely some significant impact, even though Greece is a relatively small economy where tourism is certainly a major industry for them.
Yeah, absolutely. But now, so we have a financial and economic problem with Greece. Could this lead, though, to other members leaving the European Union? Because that seems to be one of the concerns out there, that if Greece leaves, then Spain may want to leave, and Portugal. Do you see that as a potential problem?
I very much think it could be.
Wow.
I think that that the way that Greece reacts to the suggestions of the EC, the ECB, and the IMF is going to set a precedent for these countries, and there could be much greater, you know, strength on the part of the development of the left-wing parties. especially in Spain with Podemos.
Wow. All right. So now, in fact, a little closer, I'm going to move it a little closer now. What about Puerto Rico? Puerto Rico seems to be in trouble now. In fact, they're asking, I think, for the opportunity to go to Chapter 9. And I thought Chapter 9 was just for cities, not for countries.
Well, there's definitely a very interesting discussion right now regarding Puerto Rico. And I think that the timing is quite important as well. But, I mean, Puerto Rico isn't obviously a state. It's, you know, it's a territory. And
right.
So it's kind of in this intermediate phase. But it certainly is far ahead of all of the other states in terms of its debt as a share of its GDP.
So do you think they will go in default, though? I mean, I know there are a lot of Puerto Rican bonds and a lot of bond funds here in the United States. I think a lot of folks that are listening right now may not be aware of it, but I'm pretty sure there's some Puerto Rico bonds spread out in some of those bond funds.
No, that's true, but I have a feeling that Puerto Rico is going to be able to dodge the default. And again,
okay.
All of this is dependent on what the people in the country really want to do. And in Greece, it's very much split, and that's why you're seeing this. You know, on the one hand, the left-wing government, the Syriza party, is not very keen on these austerity measures. On the other hand, you know, some of the voters are very concerned about the potential for leaving the Eurozone. I think in the case of Puerto Rico, there's much fewer differences.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, they're more inclined to stay with us. Well, you mentioned the strength of the dollar. Now, I have to throw another question at you because I got this yesterday from a listener who I was speaking with, and there's a lot of concern out there on the part of some people that the U.S. dollar is going to be replaced as the currency of choice around the world. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I don't. I think that the dollar has been held in great respect and has been a substantively important reserve currency for many, many years. I don't think that that's going to change. I think one of the big issues is whether or not the Chinese currency is going to become a reserve currency per the IMF. And currently they're talking a fair bit about that, and that's why China is trying to provide more open opportunities, I would say, so that the currency moves much more effectively with how their economy is doing. But
okay.
I think this dollar is going to continue to be a reserve currency for a very, very long time.
Well, I've got a couple of other questions to ask you, Dr. Hensel, if you'll just stay with us. Folks, we've got a great show for us with you today. We've got Nayantara Hensel. We'll be back in just a few moments. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we're bringing you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got Dr. Nayantara Hensel. Dr. Hensel is Associate Director of Policy Research at the Federal Housing Agency. But most importantly for me, she was the former Chief Economist for the Department of the Navy. And during the break, she and I were talking about defense. And I was just about to ask her a question. I'm going to ask it, folks, so you can hear it. Dr. Hensel, we were talking, and you mentioned, I had asked Dr. Hensel whether or not there was a lot of overspending in defense, and she said no, that they really work hard on cutting costs and being very aware, so we no longer have the expensive toilets and all the other things that we heard about a couple of decades ago. But Dr. Hensel, one of the things that comes up from time to time is that some admiral wants something or doesn't want something, and somebody else does. It seems like, you know, like, I don't really want that plane. Sure you do. You need about, you know, you need about $35 billion worth of them. What happens there when they're doing that?
Well, again, there's always a conflict, obviously, between what the military thinks that they need and frankly, how congressmen view it, not only in terms of spending directly in the budget, but also the impact that it could have in their congressional district. You know, one of the things about defense manufacturing is that there's an aging workforce. And when you finally cut back on production of particular sets of equipment, you tend to have a lot of the aging workforce retiring. There's no transfer of skill sets to the new group because things aren't being produced. And then if later on down the road we need more of that stuff, well, the training just isn't out there.
Wow.
So
okay.
That's certainly been a very, a very big issue. And there's been a lot of different trade-offs. I mean, the Air Force is a great example. I mean, they could cut or slow the innovative new programs so that they can maintain their current force strength. But that would involve sacrificing some of the new procurement and our and research and development funding to try to sustain existing operations and maintenance. On the other hand, they could create a smaller and more tactical force by cutting older bombers like the B-1B Lancer. And so, but again, if you cut those older bombers, you can funnel that into like the some of the new things like the F-35 or the future long-range bomber or the KC-46 tanker. And you know, this is very important. Defense right now is facing challenges both in terms of budget austerity, but also in terms of the national security challenges faced with Russia, with China, and with the Middle East. I mean, it's certainly no accident that NATO is now sending out the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force, for Russia. It's no accident either that, you know, we're seeing much greater training on the part of the U.S., training some of the forces in a lot of the countries that are concerned about Russia. And there's a lot of concerns about China and its expansion of its territorial ambitions in the South and East China Sea.
I'm actually concerned. I'm all for the defense now because with Boris Yeltsin out there and with the Russian folks out there and with China taking over those islands, I guess that I assume belong to Singapore or something. There just seem to be a lot of people that are getting very aggressive out there, and so
Vietnam, Philippines, Taiwan. There's a lot of concerns. On their part, that China is, claiming some of their waters. Also, China is actually constructing man-made islands. And the issue is, are these man-made islands part of international waters, or do they belong to China? And there's been issues as well about U.S. aircraft flying over some of these man-made islands, like the Fiery Cross Atoll, because if it's Chinese territory, you're not supposed to go within 12 nautical miles of it. So there's definitely some conflict here, and I think it's particularly interesting and important when you're thinking about the potential of using the Chinese currency as a reserve currency, and when you also think about the dependency of many countries on what China exports out. For a long time, we've been dependent on rare earth minerals that's used in energy-efficient lighting. It's used in Toyota, the engines of Toyota Priuses, used in it's used a lot by DOD. And with these rare earth minerals, China had 95% to 97% of the world market on that. Yet our only U.S. manufacturer, Molycorp, that we tried to revive back in August 2010, is going in for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And that's certainly an issue about, are they going to be able to restructure in time?
Wow.
So that's a very big thing. But
yeah,
I think that right now the focus is very much on Greece and whether or not it's likely to separate from the euro. I mean, the first big issue with them is the fact that they've closed all the banks, for six business days, and there's limitations as to what can be withdrawn. The emergency funding has been capped, but it has not been increased. And so that's why the capital controls were put in, to prevent too many people from all at once pulling money out of the bank, because then without that emergency funding increasing, Greece would obviously have significant problems. And so now the issue is, well, gosh, if they don't pay on July 20th the three and a half billion euros to the ECB, then we're going to see a situation where the ECB does actually pull emergency funding, and then we go into default. The current situation, which is where 1.5 billion euros are due June 30th to the IMF, that's a situation where you can argue that Greece will just be in arrears, and that's sort of the term. It's different from actually not paying off the bonds, which is what will happen July 20th. But I think that this is all hinging on what happens on Sunday.
Right. Yeah. Let's hope the vote goes the right way. I want to switch over here to the United States, if you don't mind, because people are dying to know what you think about interest rates. Are interest rates going to go up this year? I know that this Greece situation could play into it, but assuming it doesn't and it settles down over there, what is your thought about the U.S. economy? Are we moving along well enough now for Mrs. Yellen and the folks to raise interest rates by the end of the year, or do you think you're into next year? What are your thoughts on the interest rates?
I think that we're probably into the early portion of next year, because You know, there were already some concerns about inflation, and inflation has been, you know, basically sort of muted, I would say. On the other hand, I mean, we are starting now to see some improved fundamentals with steady job gains. We're seeing some early signs of stronger wage growth. We're seeing a healthier housing market. So I think that we're showing some stages of improvement. But I think that with the muted inflation, with the potential for, if they raise interest rates, the dollar strengthening even further, and the impact that can have on manufacturing, I think that these are areas of concern, and I suspect that we're gonna be waiting until early 16. One of the things that was really driving down the GDP numbers in the first quarter was that business investment, spending in construction, machinery, research and development, was falling at a 2% pace last quarter. And that was actually the worst reading for that category since 2009. And another slowdown was the energy sector. And, you know, that was weighing down in output. And, you know, we've seen how, you know, half of the oil drilling rigs have actually been closed.
Right.
They've been shut down. And, you know, oil prices continue to remain low, especially since OPEC has not made the decision not to increase or decrease, not to cut its output. And I mean, we're even seeing increases in the tanker rates right now, because a lot of the tankers are being used not so much for demand for oil, but to actually serve as a place to store it. So, you know, the energy industry that's going to be an important thing to watch, I think. So, no, I think that probably we're going to wait till early 16. And as for the housing market, again, you know, we're seeing some improvement in the housing market, because right now mortgage rates are lower than they would be if interest rates went up. And so I think people are rushing to try to buy houses, and more to the point, to try to refinance. Those that haven't refinanced are doing it while the rates remain low.
I think you're right. Dr. Itzel, can you stay with us for a few more moments?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Folks, stay with us. On the other side of the break, I've got a couple of questions to ask Dr. Itzel about the stock market. So stay with us. Back to you in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've had with us today Dr. Nayantara Hensel, one of my favorite guests. Dr. Hensel is Associate Director of Policy Research for the Federal Housing Agency. She has a brand new book that is out today called The Defense Industrial Base, Challenges for a Globalizing World. And I wanted to ask you a few more questions. And before I let you go, Dr. Itzel, what are your thoughts on the U.S. stock market? My feeling is we're not going to see much this year. I've been telling folks since January, if we get a high single-digit return for the year, you're going to be lucky. But it sure seems to be a lot more volatile lately.
No, Mike, I absolutely agree with you. I think that we're going to see a lot of volatility, because what we're seeing with Greece is going to have a real impact on the dollar. You know, I think that the potential for contagion, again, a real impact on the dollar, a real impact on the stock markets, they're going to be reflecting a lot of the volatility and uncertainty that we have. You know, so it'll be going up and down, up and down. And so I don't think that we're going to have significant growth by the end of the year.
Now, we have quite a few people. I don't know as a percentage, but maybe they're just louder in their conversation with us than a lot of people. That feel like the U.S. currency is in danger, that you should be buying gold, and that this whole world is going to collapse, and that we have such huge debt. And frankly, I don't think many people thought that they'd be looking at debt at $18 trillion or something like that, and it certainly has exploded over the last 5 or 6 years. Do you have any thoughts or any words of comfort for us that the world isn't coming to an end, and that we will somehow manage our way out of this situation?
Well, I don't think that there's an easy answer to it. But I can say that worldwide, we're seeing a lot of countries that are having their public debt, you know, increasing. I mean, 13 EU countries have seen their public debt accelerating at a faster rate than Greece's between the first quarter of 12 and the fourth quarter of 14. Countries like Estonia, Bulgaria, Slovenia are at the top in terms of their growth of their debt. In the U.S., you know, full sequestration is supposed to hit in fiscal 16 at this point, and I think that that's going to have significant impacts on various areas of the government budget. But those are areas that, in many cases, we need, whether it's defense, it's labor, it's commerce. I think that really at the heart of it all is the importance of trying to get sustained job growth and sustained wage growth. Consumption is two-thirds of our GDP, and we're starting to see some improvements in consumption, and that's a good sign. But I think at the end of the day, the only way that we can try to cut back the debt is for the economy to improve. And I think it's very positive that we've saw some increase in incomes in May, increased about 0.5% in May from the previous month. I think it's positive that to some degree that the personal savings rate fell from 5.4% in April down to 5.1% in May, that consumers are actually spending some of their savings from gas, lower
right.
gas prices. Because that's a good offset for the fact that, you know, the gas industry and the oil drilling industry have taken a real hit in recent months because of the low prices. So I think that's really about all. And I think that what's important as well is, you know, this concern about job market uncertainty, labor market instability, desire for flexibility. That's part of the reason why even in the housing market we've seen much lower home ownership rates for millennials and even for people that are 35 to 45 as well. A lot of concerns about job market uncertainty. That's why there's a greater demand for rental, for people renting relative to buying, and that's also why rental affordability has declined. If you look at the metropolitan statistical areas, the MSAs, out of 62 MSAs, 53 of them have shown declining rental affordability over the last 4 years because there's such a demand for rent, and incomes really haven't been going up a whole lot. So, you know, we sort of have to try to correct this circular pattern here in our own economy and in economies across the world because we're all very much interlinked.
Yep, absolutely.
That's
you can just tell that by the fact that Greece has the GDP of Maryland or even greater Detroit or something. I mean, these are all the comparisons I've heard. And look at the impact that it's had. Dr. Itzel, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your insight and knowledge. We very much appreciate it. We look forward to having you back.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be on the show. And let's cross our fingers that things get better.
Thank you. Thank you. And don't forget, folks, her book is out today, The Defense Industrial Base, Challenges for a Globalizing World. I think you'll find it a very interesting read.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.